Solomon, chapter 5, Song of Solomon, chapter 5. I'd like to read verses 2 through verse 7. This would be the words of the bride, the Shulamite woman. I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. For my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night. I have put off my coat, how shall I put it on? I have washed my feet, how shall I defile them? My beloved put his hand by the hole of the door. My bowels were moved for him. I rose up to open to my beloved. My hands dropped with myrrh, my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh, upon the handles of the lock. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved hath withdrawn himself and was gone. My soul fainted when he spake. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. The watchmen that went about the city found me. They smote me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. The book of Song of Solomon, of course, holds a very special place in the Word of God. While most of the Bible deals with history and doctrine, Song of Solomon is a love song, a love story, if you will, with a very, very special message. The book is, as we all know, primarily allegorical, bounding with metaphors and imagery, with really a wide range of approaches and application, and therefore many find it very difficult to interpret. It may be the most neglected book in the Bible, certainly one of the most neglected. But all through the book we find two main characters, the bridegroom and the bride, and they are seen in communion with one another throughout the book. They're speaking to one another. Throughout Song of Solomon, we hear and we see the bridegroom expressing his love for the bride. We see the bride expressing her love to the bridegroom. They each express their appreciation for each other. So it's a song that portrays a very special relationship. I believe that it portrays, for the most part, the special relationship between Christ and his bride, the kind of church that Jesus established during his earthly ministry. But it does have a wide range of application. We cannot just limit it to Christ and his bride. We cannot just limit it to Christ and the Lord's church. There's also many lessons concerning Christ and the individual child of God and the oneness of soul that exists between Christ and the child of God. Now, in our text, Solomon paints a picture of a scene that is full of instruction and it is full of warning as well. In this scene that we've read of, we see the Shulamite woman, the bride. She's asleep. She's mostly asleep, and she is awakened by the voice of the bridegroom. And he has a special request of her, which provides her with a very special opportunity at that moment. But she failed to avail herself of that opportunity. We want to speak tonight on the subject of Christ at the door. Christ at the door. We want to consider six things concerning these verses that we just read. Notice, first of all, her condition. She confesses in verse 2, "I sleep, but my heart waketh." She is in a condition or a state of semi-slumber, semi-consciousness, half asleep, half awake. And I believe it's very descriptive of a state of spiritual fatigue, a state of spiritual sluggishness. I think it's a good picture of what we see in Revelation chapter 3. And let's turn there. Revelation chapter 3, we know that Christ is writing to the church of Laodicea, and their main problem was a condition described as lukewarmness. In Revelation 3 and verse 16, "So then because thou art lukewarm," what he means by that is you're not cold, you're not hot, "I will spew thee out of my mouth." In verse 15, he said, "Thou art neither cold nor hot." And then we come to verse 16, "Thou art lukewarm, neither cold nor hot." Now, that has been preached for the most part, that the Lord would rather have you all the way in sin rather than halfway. I find that very difficult to believe. But I don't believe that's what that verse is teaching at all. A hot drink is refreshing. A cold drink is refreshing. A lukewarm drink, if it's supposed to be hot, lukewarm is not refreshing. And if it's supposed to be cold, lukewarm is not refreshing. So God's people are to be refreshing. They're to be hot. They're to be cold. But when it becomes lukewarm, it ceases to be refreshing. Now, a hot drink or a cold drink becomes lukewarm over a period of time. You pour a cup of coffee or a cold glass of water, and you go off and you do something, and you let that coffee sit there, or you let that water sit there over a period of time, it becomes lukewarm. So over a period of time, through neglect and through indifference, it becomes lukewarm. And that's true spiritually. Through a process of time and through neglect or indifference, we become lukewarm. Now, concerning the Laodicean church, there was, as you read the letter, there was a lack of interest, there was a lack of enthusiasm, there was a lack of concern, a lack of zeal, there was a lack of response. Basically, they were apathetic, and that's the condition of lukewarmness. They were merely existing in spiritual matters. They were half-hearted. They were spiritually numb. They were pew warmers for the most part. So this condition was unacceptable. He says, "I will spew thee out of my mouth." In other words, this lukewarm condition was unacceptable to the Lord. Notice also that the condition caused a problem with their perception of themselves in Revelation 3 and verse 17. Revelation 3, verse 17. They had a wrong perception of themselves. "Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods, and have need of nothing." That was their opinion of themselves. "And knowest not that thou art wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked." So their lukewarm condition caused them to be ignorant concerning their condition. They basically were self-centered. They were self-occupied. They were self-satisfied. They were, no doubt, in Revelation 3, verse 17, they were very self-sufficient. They were very self-confident. They were filled with self-glorification. This is a horrible condition for a child of God to be in. And because of this condition, they were basically had a spirit of independence. They were arrogant. They were vain. They were worldly minded. Again, it describes the condition of many today. And they had a very high opinion of themselves. They had an entirely wrong view of themselves. Now, this condition of lukewarmness and the condition described in our text, half asleep, half awake, comes through a continuation in sin. It comes through a disregard of spiritual exercise, whether it be prayer, Bible reading, whatever. And it comes through worldly cares, being overly concerned with worldly things, when worldly things take priority over spiritual cares. This is how this condition comes about. Now, back in our text, in Song of Solomon 5, we hear the Shulamite woman. She says, "I sleep, but my heart waketh." I sleep, but my heart waketh. That's her condition. Secondly, the lover of her soul, her beloved, the bridegroom, he seeks entrance at her door. As she lies there upon her bed, in that state of semi-slumber, she becomes aware of a voice. She recognizes the voice. She's heard that voice many times. She's familiar with the voice. And the voice is calling her from outside the door. She hears the persistent knocking upon the door. His voice is very tender. His voice is pleading. And he's saying, "Open to me. Open to me." Again, this is a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ seeking fellowship with his own, longing for us to be in his presence. The Lord wants to have fellowship with his children. And he refers to her, speaking of showing the relationship that he has. He says, "My sister, my love, my dove." Speaking of a love relationship. And then he refers to her as undefiled, which speaks of his esteem of her. And what he says is, "Open to me." This is a call of love. It is a call to come near. It is a call to leave the bed that she was upon and come to the door. "Open to me." It was a present call. It's not open to me in the morning, but open to me right now. It was a very direct call. And it was a call that demands a spontaneous acceptance. "Open to me." Now this is pictured also in Revelation chapter 3 again. Verse that has been blasphemously used, but in Revelation 3 verse 20, Jesus says to this church of Laodicea, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." He's saying to these lukewarm individuals, "If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him and he with me." That is not talking about salvation. That is talking about fellowship with his own. He says, "Any man, I will come to him and will sup with him and he with me." We're talking about fellowship. This is the same thing that we see here in Song of Solomon chapter 5. So, in Song of Solomon 5, we see him there knocking. And he's speaking. He has come to where she is. And he desires and he seeks fellowship with her. Now think about it. She had experienced wonderful fellowship with him. Notice in chapter 2 of Song of Solomon and verse 3, "Has the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons." And then notice what it says. "I sat down under his shadow." That's fellowship. That's nearness. "I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste." And as he's at her door that night, knocking and speaking, "Open thou to me," what he is saying is, come and experience that shadow again. Experience that delight. Experience that fruit that is sweet to the taste. Notice also in verse 4, "He brought me to the banqueting house." That's fellowship. "She had spent time in the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love." There's a nearness there. She had enjoyed fellowship with him. In verse 6, so we're not talking about someone who is a stranger to the Lord. We're not talking about someone who is a stranger to fellowship. She knew about this fellowship. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. There's a picture there that we get in our minds. And again, it's a picture of closeness. It's a picture of sweet fellowship between her and the bridegroom. She had experienced this in the past. And now there he is. She's in bed. She's half asleep. She's been awakened by his voice. And he is simply saying, "Open to me." And we see what an opportunity. What an opportunity was hers at that very moment. And every time the Lord comes to you and I, where we are, and stands at the door and says, "Open to me," what an opportunity we have. A blessed opportunity. And we have experienced that fellowship in the past. So you would think, having experienced that fellowship in the past, we would answer immediately. We would open that door immediately. An opportunity to be together with him. That's what she had that night. She had an opportunity to be together with him. She had an opportunity to receive from him and to give unto him. She had an opportunity to interact with him and to experience him and to enjoy him. She had an opportunity to be refreshed by him, invigorated by him. And so it is with you and I. She had an opportunity that night to be more closely identified with him. You see, fellowship with God is the abundant life. Fellowship with God is resurrection life. And oh, what a life is ours to live. Fellowship with the Lord. Open thou, open to me. What an opportunity. What an opportunity for that Shulamite woman that night. Open to me. And how often he comes to where you and I are, and he speaks those words, "Open to me." An invitation to fellowship with the lover of our souls. What can be better? What can be more important than an invitation to fellowship with Jesus Christ himself? There's nothing more important. Nothing that ought to enthuse us more. Because it's fellowship with the Lord. This is where we find assurance that only he can give. This is where we find the strength and the peace that only he can give. Fellowship with him. This is where we find wisdom. This is where we find victory. This is where we find fulfillment. This is where we find everything that we need. Fellowship with the Lord. This is where spiritual desires are developed. If you and I want our spiritual desires further developed, then fellowship with the Lord. That'll develop them. Fellowship with the world will never, ever develop spiritual desires. It'll kill spiritual desire. But fellowship with the Lord will develop spiritual desires. It'll feed spiritual desires. It'll nourish spiritual desires. Fellowship with God, this is where convictions are formed. Convictions aren't formed out in the world. Convictions are formed by being near unto God. It is fellowship with the Lord. This is how we live above the world. So what an opportunity was hers that evening when he comes to her place of residence and knocks on the door and says, "Open, open to me." That's grace and mercy. It's grace and mercy that he would desire fellowship with you and I. It is grace and mercy that he would seek fellowship with us. It is he that is seeking fellowship with her. That is amazing. That the Lord would seek fellowship with you and I. And he did so while she was in this condition. Half asleep, half awake. And yet he's still willing to come and fellowship with her. Thirdly, notice her response, which warns us of the danger of this condition of semi-slumber. Half asleep, half awake. She is conscious enough to hear. And she is conscious enough to recognize his voice. She said, "It is the voice of my beloved." Again, she had heard that voice before in chapter 2 and verse 8. The voice of my beloved. Verse 10 of chapter 2. My beloved spake and said unto me. She knew that voice. So she was awake enough spiritually to recognize his voice. I mean, you're in really bad shape if you can't even recognize his voice. But she was awake enough to recognize his voice. And she loves him. It's not that she didn't love him. She loved him. Chapter 1 and verse 13. She refers to him as my well-beloved. In verse 14. My beloved. In verse 16. My beloved. In chapter 2 and verse 3, same thing. My beloved. Verse 8, verse 16 of chapter 2. Verse 17. Chapter 4, verse 16. My beloved. She loved the one that was at that door. And I don't believe that she had any desire to be unkind to him. And there are many in that condition. They know his voice. They have a love, they have a regard for the Lord. And it's not that they have a desire to mistreat him. It's not that they have a desire to be unkind to him. But in her condition, she is more concerned with her satisfaction and her fleshly desires than she is for the one that's at that door. And that describes the condition of many. He's knocking. He's pleading. He's desiring closer fellowship with her. She now has a wonderful opportunity of blessing. But in her state of semi-slumber, at this moment, she is willing for him to wait. She is willing to put him off. To put him off. We're all guilty. We've all put off the Lord. He comes. It's not that we don't love him. It's not that we're trying to be unkind, but we put them off. We put them off. And that's what she did. Because in her mind, now if we put off the Lord, we always have a reason for doing so. We always do. It's not a good reason, but because there is no good reason. But we always have a reason for doing so. And we convince ourselves that our reason justifies us for putting him off. She had a reason. There were other things that were more pressing to her at that time. The result was that there was no open door of welcome. But instead, she begins to make excuses. There in verse 3. She says, I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? That is, I've put off my coat. I don't want to go through the trouble of putting it back on. I've washed my feet. I don't want to get up and walk across this dirt floor and have to do that again. She is saying, I've already undressed. I've gotten ready for bed. I've washed my feet. And if I get up from this bed and walk upon the floor, my feet will get dirty. And I'll have to wash them all over again. That's that Laodicean condition. We don't know how long he knocked. We don't know how long he stood there and spoke. But we do know this. She lingered in her sleepiness, hearing his voice as he continually calls, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. But she is saying, not now. Not now. Wait. Some other time. Lord, you know I would, but. How many times have we heard that? Well, I would, but. Putting off the Lord. Because we don't want to be inconvenienced. Because there's other things more important. She heard his voice. She heard what he said. Open to me. She also heard him when he said, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. She also saw. She looked toward the door and saw his hand as he reaches through the door near the latch. And at that moment, she felt compassion in her heart. He says there in verse 4, and my bowels or my heart were moved for him. So we're not dealing with an individual here who has absolutely no feeling toward him at all. That's a lost person. That's an unsaved person who has no feeling at all toward the Lord. This is a person in a state of semi-slumber. And compassion can still be stirred within her because she loves him. So it was not that she had no feeling toward him at all. But like many of God's people, it's not that she doesn't love him. It's not that she doesn't desire his nearness. It's not that she has absolutely no interest in him. But she wants to set the terms. She's not ready right now. So she doesn't open the door. And how many of God's people today want to set the terms? You and I don't set the terms. He sets the terms. She has had her bath. She's put on her night garments. She doesn't want to be bothered about other things until her own time. He's calling. He's knocking. And to her, it's no big deal for him to wait. because he's probably waited before. And it's just not a big deal. He'll understand. He'll understand. And many times people will say that, well, the Lord understands. Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And that isn't always comforting. He does understand. This is the very reason why so many of God's people who ought to be serving and submitting and worshiping and thanking and praising the one who saved her soul are cold and powerless because they're always putting Christ off. Always putting fellowship with the Lord off. Notice fourthly, he withdraws himself. In her time, she decided that she would get up and let him in. Again, we're not talking about salvation, we're talking about fellowship. But to her grief and dismay, she says in verse 6, I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself. That specific time or opportunity of fellowship had passed. It's not that she can never have fellowship with him again, but that specific opportunity had passed. He had withdrawn himself. She opens the door. Keep in mind that her heart has been stirred within her now. She longs for him now. And she opens the door and he's gone. She looked out, and he was not to be seen. It says there that in verse 6, I sought him, but I could not find him. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. That's what it says. She rushes out into the streets, calls his name. Oh, my beloved, come back. I'm ready for you now. I'm ready for you now. But there's no answer. He's gone. She's grief-stricken. I'm sure almost frantic. The lesson is, we cannot put off the Lord and ignore His will until we get good and ready. And then expect Him to jump at our bidding. Yet that's exactly what most people think. There are many today of God's people, again, who ought to be serving, ought to be submitting, ought to be worshiping, thanking and praising the one who saved their soul. But instead, they've been pushing Christ's purposes to the side. They've been ignoring His will. They belittle His call. And they are wrapped up in themselves, and they are wrapped up in the secular interest of life. And then one day they're ready, and guess what? That ship has sailed. He's gone. He's gone. So that this condition, it was her condition that caused her to respond in the way that she did. So this condition is very, very dangerous. The danger is the Lord may withdraw Himself. The opportunity of fellowship at that moment had passed. You can't treat the Lord any way you please and snap your finger when you want Him to do something for you. It doesn't work that way. It never has worked that way. Notice also that she brought some problems. and difficulties into her life. So she's longing for him now. That's good. That's very good. And she's seeking him. That's good. She knows, I need him. I need him. But he had withdrawn himself. And for now, she cannot find him. What does she do? She goes out into the city in search of him. And there in that city, she meets with trouble. Verse 7. She's going in verse 6. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. That's a miserable time in a child of God's life when you seek him and cannot find him. When you call him and he does not answer. What do you do when that happens? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But she longs for him. She cannot find him. She goes into the city, and the watchmen that, in verse 7, the watchmen that went about the city found me. They smote me. They wounded me. She brought harm to herself. The keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. Now think about it. Had she responded to his call, she wouldn't have had to go out into the streets. Why is she out in the streets? Because she did not respond. And now she's in a place that she doesn't have to be in. But that's where she is. How sad. She could have avoided the streets. She could have avoided all the harm that came upon her that night in the streets. Had she just opened the door? And oh, how many troubles and difficulties and sorrows would be avoided if we just responded to his call. If we just immediately responded to his call, we could avoid a lot of things. If we immediately responded to his directions, if she would have done that rather than make excuses, I've put off my robe, I've washed my feet. Those were excuses. And had she just responded and opened the door, had she not insisted upon setting her terms, waiting for a more convenient time. I've had people tell me, I will serve the Lord, I'll be able to serve the Lord when I retire. It's never happened yet. Girls, you don't serve God that way. If you can wait that long, guess what? When that day comes, you'll find some other reason to put it off. So, she didn't have to go through any of these things. She brought trouble into her life. Sixthly and lastly, there's an example of what to do if we find ourselves in this situation. Let's say where the Lord speaks to us, we hear his voice, we know it's his voice, we can hear what he's saying, but for whatever reason, we put him off. We become convicted. And we begin to move in his direction. But he's not there. We cry out to him. But he's not there. What are we to do? Do you just throw up your hands and say, what's the use? He's forsaken me? No, he hasn't. You forsook him. So what are we to do? You're to keep seeking him. You never stop. You never stop. You call, he does not answer. What do? Quit calling? Is that going to get you the answer? No. You call and he doesn't answer, you keep calling. You keep calling. You go out in the streets and you look for him, but you can't find him. What do? Stop looking? No, you keep looking. And that's what she did. She does that through chapter 5. She does it through chapter 6. She's now in search of him. In other words, don't be deterred. Even if he doesn't answer, don't let that deter you. The Syrophoenician woman in the Gospels is a wonderful example of that. He answered her not a word. Didn't stop her. She kept on asking. At this point, she's willing to do anything to be reunited with her beloved. And that should be our attitude as well. She had been indifferent to him, but now she says in verse 8, I am sick of love, or I am lovesick. That is, her heart is aching to be near him and in his arms. She wants nothing more than to be reunited with him. Before, she was too lazy to get out of bed, too indifferent to get out of bed, to open the door. But now her heart is set upon him, and she continually seeks him. Keep seeking. If this happens, keep seeking. In chapter 6, and we'll close in chapter 6, verse 13. Notice what he says. She's seeking. Return, return. O Shulamite, return, return. And that's what the Lord is saying the whole time we're seeking. He hasn't forgotten. He says, return, return. Truth is, you might have to go through some things while you're seeking. But if you do, let that be a lesson learned. Next time he says open, you open. Chapter 7, verse 12. He says to her, let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine flourish where the tender grape appear and the pomegranates bud forth. There will I give thee my loves. But then notice in chapter 8 and verse 5, she's now with him. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness leaning upon her beloved? She's now leaning upon him. But wouldn't it have been a lot easier had she just opened? Had she just properly responded right from the get-go? Usually, a child of God will eventually come to their senses. But all the trouble we could avoid if we would just properly respond as soon as the opportunity is there to fellowship with him. We have all missed times of fellowship with the Lord that we can never regain. It's not that we can't have fellowship with him, but that opportunity for that particular time, it's gone. And we robbed ourselves of that simply because we had something else to do. We had something else more important than fellowship with the Lord. There are a lot of lessons here in Song. One of these days I'm going to preach a series of messages. There are many wonderful lessons in Song of Solomon just on marriage itself. How many times in marriage have wonderful opportunities been lost because the wife or the husband was put off? For what? Oh, something more important. but it wasn't. We lose many opportunities. The book is so filled with lessons. Again, there's wonderful instruction here. There's warning. Now, how we ought to thank God. You and I can fall into sin. And there we are wallowing in sin. And the Lord comes. And He says, "My child, open to Me." While we're in our sin, He desires fellowship with us. And we put Him off. And all we've done is added to the time in the hog pen. We've just added to the time being in our sin. Oh, that we would have an immediate, proper response to the Lord when He calls. Whatever He calls us to do, that we would just, with Isaiah and Isaiah 6, "Here am I, Lord. Here am I. Here am I. What do You want, Lord?" That should be our attitude. God help us that we would have that attitude. Brother Tim, if you'd come and